So good evening, everyone. And I thought we could start. This is the third week now of the introductory course, and it's 7 o'clock, and it's nice to kind of start a little bit slowly since people are still coming in. And so it'd be nice just if anyone has any questions or comments, or if anybody would like to make some reports about how the practice is going, and if you're trying it at home. This is a nice, yes.
Noticed that I haven't been dreaming for a long time, and I noticed since like even the first week that I started dreaming, or at least I was more aware, I was aware of it.
Yeah, it's relatively common for people who start meditating regularly to sometimes become more aware of the dreams and sometimes become less aware of dreaming. It's more likely to become more aware of it if anything happens. Meditation retreats where people are meditating all day, people sometimes report very vivid dreaming at night. They're very alive, and I don't know if I want to go into try to make some explanations of it, but generally the so-called unconscious begins showing itself more when we meditate, because part of what meditation does is it relaxes the surface discourse, the surface discussions and conversations and arguments and that we're having all the time in our mind, all the kind of ways that we distract ourselves and busy ourselves with our mind, kind of the surface layer of the mind. And when that surface layer relaxes, then the stuff that's kind of underneath that can show itself more clearly. And that sometimes is called the unconscious. In Buddhism, maybe it doesn't always call the unconscious, it can just be called the unnoticed. Is that which we haven't noticed yet? It's the noticeable, but we just haven't gotten around to looking at it. Yeah?
The first week we were noticing the breath, and I say you see them often.
Nice.
And second week we're noticing our physical sensations. So as I'm noticing what's happening in my body, am I also trying to hold on to the receiving and offering part of the breath?
No. The idea in mindfulness meditation is to bring careful attention to what's in the foreground of attention, what's predominant in your experience. And so first we place the attention on the breath and kind of place it in the foreground and give some interest to it. But if something else comes into the foreground, if, for example, some physical sensation comes into the foreground, the instructions is to let go of the breath entirely and let your full conscious attention, as best you can, be on this physical sensation. Yes?
When I tried to bring my attention to the physical this past week, it often went right to my pounding heart. And I've experienced this almost all my life, and I've been trying to figure out various ways to calm it and hoped for it to settle as I focused on it, and it just got worse. Mm-hmm. So I had to abandon that and wondered if you had any ideas for what to do about that.
Well, this area of the heart is a place where a lot of people have strong sensations and strong feelings. So if we start paying attention to our body, a lot of people will become aware of the things going on around the heart or around the chest, various kinds of feelings, and certainly the rhythm of the heart can be closely connected to some of our emotions, especially fear or anger. It can be very healing to bring attention to this area if that's what's being called for. Just hold it in a non-interfering awareness, non-judgmental awareness. Just the best you can. Don't try to be bothered by it. Just kind of hold it, like you're holding a little kitten or something. It's fragile. You're kind of holding it gently in your hands and not hurting it, but letting it be just what it is. That's kind of the best attitude towards it. However, if you find that bringing attention to the breath, to your heartbeat, makes you somehow self-conscious around it, and a little bit more anxious, and the heartbeat speeds up, then it's probably best just to ignore the heartbeat. And there'll be lots of opportunities later to come back to it. So just focus on other things. Yes?
I'm finding that when I meditate and I shift attention to various parts of my body, I tend to visualize those parts, and I'm wondering if perhaps that may bring different associations rather than just focusing on that sensation.
Right. Well, thank you. That's a good question for many people. Some people think more in words, and some people think more in images. And even people who think in words sometimes will see things rather than, you know, think them. But imaging things through the mind's ability to visualize is another form of thinking. And to the degree in which thinking can keep us removed from experience, we're not really interested in visualizing. To the degree in which you're visualizing something, you're not really feeling it. You're seeing it, but what you're seeing is a reconstruction in the mind. And the mind, to its best ability, based on memory and whatever, is kind of reconstructing an image. But that image is not necessarily not the sensation itself. So, for example, if someone, you know, if you're shaking someone's hand, you can close your eyes and kind of visualize what that looks like. And you kind of, you're visualizing what's actually happening. But that's very different from actually feeling their hot, pressy, sweaty, you know, gripping hand on your hand, you know, whatever, or maybe, you know, sweet and gentle hand or whatever. It's very different than the actual sensations of the hand. So what we're trying to do in meditation for the physical sensations is to feel the way the body experiences it as sensation, not through the avenue of the mind, which thinks about it or visualizes it. Does that make sense?
But I find that it's just a reflex, that
right.
Visualization comes up
there. Right.
A way to...
Certainly you don't want to make it a problem. It's like it's a bad thing, you shouldn't be doing it. It's just kind of what happens naturally for some people. When you notice that's happening, then the instruction is just to make a simple note or simple recognition. Oh, this is seeing. Seeing in the present moment, the experience I'm having, I'm seeing. I'm seeing something, I'm visualizing. And you can just note that, and then notice. And after noting it, then see if you can come back and put the primary attention on the physical sensation itself, the best you can, and see if you can let the image kind of be in the background. Sometimes visual images are quite compelling, and they're really in the foreground. In which case, if they're really compelling, then they become the meditation, and we just do seeing until it changes. Make sense? So, one of the important insights or important teachings of Buddhism, or insights of Buddhism, or one of the aspects of life which Buddhism puts a lot of emphasis on is the aspect of impermanence, change, transiency. It's fairly common in the philosophies of humankind for philosophers or religious teachers to point towards impermanence. Heraclitus said, you know, you can't put your foot in the same river two times in a row. The river's always flowing. It's always a new river. There's always change. Buddhism emphasizes change and impermanence more than most philosophies and religion. It's really a key emphasis or focus on Buddhism. And the reason for this is that the mind has a very strong tendency to reify things or to fixate on things. One of the primary things we fixate is a sense of self, that this is who I am, and we create an identity. The etymology of the word identity, it means something like the same as, sameness. Having an identity is being fixated or attached to an identity is having this fixation that who I am today is going to be who I am tomorrow. Who I'm going to be tomorrow has to be the same as what it is today. I am this way. I'm an angry person. That's my identity. That's who I am. So I'm assuming I bring that with me tomorrow and assume I have to be angry. That's my identity. That's who I think I have to be. Most of us have been in a situation where we've been on the receiving end of someone who've locked ourselves in a certain, we see us as a certain identity. They see, oh, that person was angry with me last year, therefore I always think of you as being angry. And then, no, I'm not always angry. Please don't look at me that way. I'm not just that way. But we do that to ourselves. But we do that towards a lot of different things. We focus on the objects of experience. We focus on objects. This is what kind of a lot of what the human mind does, and with kind of a tendency to think, take objects as being permanent, as being fixated. One of the cute stories I like to tell is I used to think that currency is a fixed thing. You can trust currency; it doesn't change. You know, bills. You know, it says in God we trust and all that. And, you know, you can trust it. You know, it doesn't change; it stays the same. It goes up and down a little bit against the yen, but you know, it's just, you know, basically the same. But when I was in Burma, overnight the government decided that the most of the bills, monetary bills that existed in circulation, they were not valid anymore. So imagine waking up tomorrow morning and the United States government says, you know, by the way, your $20 bills you have, and we're not going to accept them anymore. Kind of amazing, right? And most of the Burmese didn't trust the bank, so they had a lot of cash at home, and suddenly all the cash was worthless overnight. Things change. Or the people on the meditation retreat in Yucca Valley a few years ago, there was a major earthquake, and the epicenter was right there in the meditation hall, basically. And you know, and people reported afterwards, you know, that I always you know, thought the ground was permanent and solid, and you can kind of rely on it. And the ground buckled and waved, and you know, it wasn't so solid, you know. We have certain emotional responses and reactions, and even though maybe our better sense knows better, we sometimes relate to the particular emotion as, oh my God, this is it. You know, I'm depressed and I'll be depressed forever. You know, or I'll never get depressed again. I'm feeling happy. This is it. I'll be happy forever now. Or whatever. You know, we take things and we kind of have this expectation of permanence, of things we want. We want things not to change so much. Ourselves, our relationships we're in, the jobs we have, inner aspects of our life. And it's a kind of a natural tendency, because what we tend to do is look at objects, and we want some stability in the world of objects. What Buddhism wants to emphasize or point out or highlight is that the so-called objects of the world are in constant flux and constant change. And any attempt to resist change or to fight change too much or to deny the impermanence of things is asking for suffering, is asking for frustration. And so what part of what Buddhist meditation is about, mindfulness meditation, is not so much fixating on a particular state or particular experience or particular object of awareness, but rather discovering that ability we have of awareness staying fluid. The awareness itself can be the kind of container, perhaps, of all the change. Normally, our awareness fixates on certain things. So, for example, when I was buying a couch a few years ago, until then, I never noticed that there were couch stores in the world. And suddenly, I saw couch stores everywhere. I would fixate on couch stores, you know, pick out that out of the environment. And, you know, many of us do this. We fixate certain things. We're certain things we're afraid of, certain things we want, certain things we preoccupied about ourselves. And we kind of fixate on these things. And this is how we use our awareness. But there's a whole other aspect or possibility in awareness, and that is awareness can kind of be relaxed. And in that relaxed awareness, it doesn't fixate, hold, or get attached to anything. It allows things to move through in its natural flux, in the natural transiency of all things. We don't have to have a fixed identity. We can allow who we are to be constantly flowing and changing through us as we're aware of it. Our memories, our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our physical sensations can flow rather than being frozen. You know, it's interesting that some emotions are very clearly frozen. Frozen. For example, resentment, I understand as being frozen anger. Certain forms of grief are frozen sadness, frozen sadness. Other forms of grief, good grief, is grief which is flowing through. I've had experience of, or people have told me quite dramatically, of having tremendous amount of loss in their lives, people dying in their family. And when they're at home living their lives, waves of grief would come over them. And they would resist it, they would fight it, they would distract themselves, and it would take maybe a few hours for the wave to kind of wash through. And then they go on a Buddhist meditation retreat where you're really supposed to be present for what's actually happening and not resisting and not distracting yourself, not getting kind of pulled away from anything, just really being there for your experience. And they found the more they can open to the experience, the waves would become more intense, but they'd pass in minutes rather than in hours. Rise and pass. This ability to open the awareness up and not have it fixated on something, but rather keep it kind of fluid so that all the experiences of the world can go through gracefully. Things change, often sometimes against our will or desire, and sometimes with, you know, the way we want. And change is going to visit all of us. All of us are going to be buffeted by change. All of us will get sick, all of us will die, and all kinds of other things might happen. $20 bills might not be worth anything tomorrow. Suddenly we wake up tomorrow morning and the stock market has crashed. There's many kinds of changes that are visited to us. And Buddhist practice is not a protection against those kinds of change. It'd be unrealistic to expect a religion to say, well, I'm going to protect you from the stock market changing, or I'm going to protect you from ever dying or getting sick. But what this mindfulness practice is trying to show us and teach us is that we can kind of keep the awareness fluid and open and allow this change to go through us, as opposed to contracting and resisting and doing all the kind of painful things we do in relationship to the changing circumstances of our life. Make sense somehow? So one of the reasons why we focus on the breath, this is kind of the anchor or the kind of the core of mindfulness practice, is the breath is a wonderful example of change. It's something that's constantly moving and flowing within us. It arises and it passes. The inhalation arises, it's there for a while, it comes to a peak, and then it passes as the exhalation and it goes away. And if you resist the breath, or resist change, you'll feel that in all kinds of problematic ways in your body. The tension and holding of your body. And so one of the places we begin to learn the capacity of the mind to be open to change is in being open to how the breath moves and changes within us. Just opening to that and letting, almost as if the breath is the mind is like a shore, an ocean shore, and the waves of change, the waves of the breath are just washing back and forth across it. And you're just there for the change, the endless change, all the energy. Of the endless ocean of breathing moving back and forth. So this is one of the places where we begin the appreciation of change. So let's begin then with a little meditation. So take a comfortable but alert posture, seeing if you can make the spine a little bit more alive or alert than it usually is. And then around that alert spine, relax the muscles, relax your stomach. And then in the beginning of a sitting, it's often nice to take a few deep breaths. As you breathe in deeply, to let that inhalation connect you with the inside of your body, from the inside. And as you breathe out, to let the exhalation release you, relax you into this body, into this chair, into this place you're sitting. And then letting your breath become normal, no special effort in breathing. And it's also nice to take a few moments to scan through the body, to relax any of the obvious muscles that might be tense. You might start at the top of the head, relaxing the forehead, the temples. Letting the eyelids and the eyes be soft. If your eyelids are fluttering, if it's easy to relax them, fine. If it's not, then be soft and relaxed about them fluttering. Might be possible to relax the cheeks and the jaws. And it might be possible to soften the shoulders a little bit. Perhaps as you breathe out, you can release the shoulders, the shoulder blades. And the same with the chest. Sometimes the chest can be released. Perhaps as you breathe out. And to soften the belly. Let the belly, the stomach hang out, hang forward. And then take a few moments to feel your whole body sitting here. Whatever way the body happens to feel this moment. Remembering that the practice of mindfulness is one of allowing our experience to be as it is. And then within the body, as part of the body, become aware of the body breathing. Become aware of the body inhaling and exhaling. Letting go of your thoughts and your concerns. In order to become sensitive to the change, the changing that's inherent in breathing. How some sensations arise and pass. With the inhalation, there's rising, there's movement, there's expansion, there's pressure, perhaps. And with the exhalation, there's a different form of movement. There's release, contraction. Let the waves of breath wash peacefully across the shore of your awareness. When you notice that the mind wanders off in thought, notice how the mind in sense fixates itself on different thoughts and ideas, conversations. And if you can, see if you can relax again, relax the mind. And let the awareness receive the breathing again. Relaxing any judgment or fixation, resistance you might have. Let things be as they are. In the midst of that, be aware of your breathing. Let there be an intimacy with your breath. And as we continue sitting here for a few minutes, let go of paying attention to the breath now. And take a few moments to feel what is the basic mood or emotional state that is strongest for you at this moment. Are you calm or agitated? Content or uneasy? Happy or sad, angry or peaceful. If you can discern or notice what the most prominent emotional state is that's present for you now, see if you can just feel it. with a spacious awareness, just allowing it to be as it is, with an awareness that doesn't judge or want it to be different. Maybe you can very, very quietly, very softly as you can, name the emotion as a way of acknowledging it. And then as you feel the emotion, the mental state or the mood, how is it felt? How is that state felt in your body? Is there some place in your body in particular that seems to express most strongly the feeling of that mood or emotional state? And if you find a place in your body, bring your careful awareness to feel the emotion in the body. Allowing yourself to feel what is there. Noticing what happens, what's happened to the emotion as you are present for it. And then again to softly come back to your breathing. And once again feel intimately the experience of inhaling, breathing in, and the experience of breathing out, the exhalation. So this ability of awareness to remain open, unfixated, non-resistant, just open to allow the experience to move through it, is perhaps the reason why awareness is one of the more sacred realities in Buddhism. And what makes awareness sacred is when awareness excludes nothing. Mostly, as we live our lives, there's a strong tendency for people to exclude different parts of themselves, different parts of the experience, from their awareness, what they want to pay attention to. Certain things we don't want to look at about ourselves, or look at with our friends or neighbors or whatever, or certain parts of the world we don't want to pay attention to. Some of us only read certain parts of the newspaper, not other parts. I don't know if that's really a fair example, but there's a kind of way in which we often exclude or select out of the environment what we're willing to pay attention to or not. And what makes awareness sacred in the Buddhist realm is when awareness excludes nothing, when there's nothing which is considered to be outside of what awareness can include. And when awareness includes everything, then everything's included in its own balanced way, as it seems as needed. Now, as we know, there's a fair number of people in our society for whom emotions are a place where they don't pay attention. They haven't been trained or haven't learned or to pay attention to their emotions, or they've been had difficult experiences with their emotions, and they say, no way, I'm not going to pay attention to that. And so they shut down, they don't pay attention to such things. I discovered when I first started doing Buddhist practice, this kind of meditation practice, that I was not very aware of my anger. That I had a self-image, self-identity, that I was supposed to be, I am, a non-angry kind of person. So that was the degree in which I identified with that and fixated on that, it didn't allow for the possibility of my anger kind of to come into that, because that would have denied or my self-image. So I kind of ignored that. I didn't, you know, other people probably could see it, but I wasn't aware that I was angry, and it caused certainly a lot of suffering for myself, that I was only half consciously aware of how painful I was living. So many people have this experience that certain emotions. Some people have a very balanced relationship to their emotions, and that's nice. And some people have an overemphasis on their emotional life. They kind of, they're not repressed about their emotions one bit. Some of their friends wish they were. It's just like they like zoom in on their emotions, and emotions is like the be all and end all of their life. You know, and this is, you know, what's really important. And for other people, their physical experience, their body is what they're not in touch with. And other people are very much in touch with their body, and at the expense of being aware of many other important things. Some people are very much in touch with their mind and their ideas and their cognitive understandings and perceptions. And some people are not so particularly aware of their motivations or what goes on in their minds, their thoughts, and they know very well what goes on in their feelings. The sacred awareness, which is open to it all, is an awareness that receives it all in a balanced way, that doesn't, as an agenda, pick up anyone, or doesn't, out of resistance, keep away from anything. So Buddhism includes, then, emotions as part of what the meditation practice of mindfulness includes. But not with some overly strong emphasis on it, but not to deny its importance either. But just allow it to have time in its own way, its own time, to come into our awareness and inform us and to teach us what we need to learn, what needs to happen. Kind of as a way of encouraging us not to look at emotions in some fixed idea. There are certain people in the West who have kind of this manifesto of opinions about their emotions and what has to happen to their emotions and what has to happen to other people's emotions. And they really, this is, you know, emotions are like really important. And it's very interesting that in India or in Buddhist languages, in Indian languages, there's no word that corresponds to the English word emotion. Isn't that amazing? For those of us who are really kind of champions of emotions and emotional expression, there's no word in Buddhism for emotion. And part of the reason for that is emotion is a category word. It's a word that covers a whole category of things. It's kind of like an umbrella word that categorizes a certain number of events within it. Anger and sadness and whatever, you know. So Buddhism just simply hasn't chosen to have that category of way of looking at our inner experiences. Buddhists get angry and sad and happy and delighted and all these things. But they have different category. It's like there's a human being is a pie of different experiences. And different cultures will divide up the pie of human experience in different ways. And in the West, in English, we have a certain pi section we call emotions. And in Buddhism, they don't have that pi section. They have a different pi section. And so it's kind of interesting, because maybe we can kind of begin looking at our emotions in a little bit different way than we usually do. Maybe they're not so fixed, or maybe our philosophy around what they are, maybe we can kind of hold more lightly. It's all very interesting to me that the English word emotion, the E of emotion means out, and motion means motion. And so inherent in the English word emotion is movement, is change, is flux, which is one of the primary things we're becoming comfortable with when we do Buddhist meditation. Emotions are, I like to think of emotions as constantly in process or constantly in movement. Emotions want to move. They don't want to be frozen. It's the mind or our attachments or our resistances which freeze emotions in a certain way. If we don't freeze it in a certain way with our resentment or whatever, then actually they want to flow and change, like waves are moving through us. There's motion inherent in emotions. And so the degree to which we can open up and discover this awareness that allows things to be and allows things to move through freely, we can allow our emotions to move through us freely also. And it can be a great relief to do that. It's not to deny the emotions, but it's really to give them the freedom. Another way of talking about this is what we're looking for in Buddhism is to have uncomplicated emotions. There's no emotions which are considered unacceptable for the context of mindfulness meditation. You sit in mindfulness meditation and you're allowed to feel and experience whatever possible human emotion and human experience that a human person could have on this planet. You can have the most evil thoughts you could possibly imagine. You can have the most saintly thoughts and feelings you can ever imagine. You can have the most angry, the most beneficent, the most whatever. In this posture, in this particular meditation practice, it's maybe the one place that some of us have where we're really given unconditioned permission to allow those things to be there and not to resist them or judge them or say they shouldn't be there. But in the service of discovering the freedom of awareness that doesn't fixate on any of it, that doesn't get preoccupied by any, doesn't buy into any of it, but just allows it to be there in an uncomplicated way. To have uncomplicated emotions is a lot of what we're looking for. So there's a simile, I guess, that the Buddha gave of the arrow, two arrows. The Buddha was speaking to a practitioner, a student, and he said, if someone comes along and hits you with an arrow, is that painful if you get struck by an arrow? And the guy said, well, yes, the Buddha, it'd be very painful to be struck by an arrow. And then the Buddha said, well, that's good. Now, if the same person comes along and strikes you with a second arrow, is that also painful? Is that more painful? Oh yeah, it's even more painful to be hit by two arrows than by one. And so the Buddha said, in life, we can't always control the first arrow. But the second arrow is what we do to the first arrow, what we do to that experience. So, for example, we might not be able to have much control over whether we get sick or not. So we get sick. We find ourselves sick. So it's painful. It's a painful situation. It's uncomfortable. But the second arrow that we might add to that is we might feel guilty, or we might feel angry, or we might feel despondent, or we might have all kinds of judgments that we add on top of that that are suffering and producing. Some terrible tragedy happens. A whole range of stuff, from our houses being flooded to cars being crashed and whatever. And do we add a second arrow to it, or do we simply allow it to be there? I remember once when I was kitchen foreman at Tassajara, I said something inappropriate to one of my co-workers. And I got this wonderful lesson in him in uncomplicated anger. At the time, I called it clean anger. He turned around to me, and he just had this razor sharp, clean anger. He said, don't do that to me. I said, you shouldn't do that to me. Just really ferociously. I got the point immediately. But what struck me was that it took him about 2 or 3 seconds to say what he had to say. It was very brief. He was really clear and clean. And then it was gone, completely gone from him. There was no more anger in him. This idea that you can, he was completely uncomplicated with his anger. He allowed his anger to arise. The anger occurred. And he didn't add any second arrow to it. He didn't kind of justify it or get into it or feel like he, you know, create a vendetta out of it or require something happen, you know. He just expressed his anger and let it be that way. And it was like, you know, the energy behind it just, it dissolved for him as soon as he said it. I received it. I got the message. And because he was so clean about it, I could just kind of change my behavior and go on with life. But it would have been very easy for me to have added all kinds of second and third and fourth arrows. Oh my God, what a terrible person I am, and I, you know, I better, you know, maybe I should never speak up again, or all these ideas about, you know, I could have... In this meditation practice, what we're learning to do is to leave things alone as they come through awareness and respect them as we do that. It's not out of disrespect, but not to add that second arrow, to allow things to be there in an uncomplicated way. So with that, yes?
I have a question for you about the meditation.
Yes.
When I was doing it, I found my hands and my feet almost fall asleep, and they got very warm.
Uh-huh.
And it was really relaxing.
Now, in falling asleep, do you mean they were getting numb?
Almost numb. Or, I mean, I still felt them and I felt warm, but almost tingling numb.
It's fairly common, or somewhat common, for people when they start getting calm, for their extremities to sometimes get warm. Maybe it's something with the blood flow changes or whatever. And I can imagine that some people would interpret that warmness, warm kind of feeling, kind of relaxed feeling, as a kind of numbness, kind of falling asleep perhaps. So maybe that's all it is. Maybe take it as a good sign. Sometimes, though, the circulation is cut. And like especially with the feet and the legs, with the foot actually does fall asleep. And when the end of the meditation comes, you know, they better not stand up too quickly. And sometimes for people who spend a lot, especially in our culture, for people who spend a lot of time on a computer terminal, sometimes there's nerve damage. And if there's tingling in the fingers, sometimes it's more symptomatic of nerve damage rather than anything good in meditation. So probably it's the first one for you.
Oh, it is. It feels good.
Yeah. So that's good. Thank you. I was actually just at that very moment going to turn it over and I talked for a while, and it'd be nice to hear a little bit what your experience was of that first meditation we did today. Any questions you have about it? Yes. Yes.
I found that so long as I'm holding onto my breath and everything, works okay. But I tried to focus on something else, and while I was focusing on something else, I kind of, not exactly forgot, but I found that my breathing stopped. Yeah. I forgot to breathe. Well, no, I really kind of caught myself that I really need to take a breath. And so that I struggled for a while. If I pay attention to this thing, I have problems breathing. So I always have to come back and watch my breathing.
Uh-huh. But does that happen a lot in your daily life?
No.
If you're driving your car on the freeway, do you...
I stop breath.
What?
No, it doesn't.
Your breath breathes by itself.
Yeah, but it's like, it's not a stop. Stop is the wrong word. Like, I hold my breath,
yeah.
You know.
I understand. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. I would just take it as something else to become aware of. And sometimes what we pay attention to is very particular things, and sometimes what we pay attention to is kind of the general kind of range of things that are happening in the present moment. So if what you become aware of is that you, as you described, you bring your attention to something else, and the breath kind of gets held or something, you don't breathe as normally as you usually do. Just be aware of that. Just be aware that the breath is not happening as smoothly as usually does, and then bring your attention and feel what that's like to have an uncomfortable breath. I think if you don't, if you're kind of relaxed and don't worry about this phenomena, with time it'll work itself out and you won't have any problems with your breathing. The more anxious you are about it, the more you'll tie up the breath. Yes?
You mentioned that the Indian languages don't have a word for emotion. Yes. They do.
Ah.
So then it comes all the way from Sanskrit.
What is that?
Bhavana.
Bhavana.
So I don't know if it doesn't exist in Pali. Bhavana. The possibility that it disappears.
What does bhavana mean otherwise?
Really? Bhav also means facial expression. So.
B-H-A-V-A?
B-H-A-V-A-N-A.
Okay, that's interesting to know.
I don't know what it originates from, Sanskrit. I mean, I'm not really rooted in Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I'm wrong. I've been corrected. So I'll look it up or study this a little bit, but especially looking up in Buddhism. But this is something that I've noticed and other scholars have noticed also, at least with Buddhism, that there's no particular word that translates the word emotions in a clear way. And so usually people are translating from Buddhist languages into English. So it's usually not trying to go back. But when people try to do, they don't seem to have one. So that's interesting. Thank you. Bhavana. The word, does it come from the root bu, which means to be?
I only know the related word bhav, which is facial expression. So that kind of seems to make sense. Hmm. And I don't know any other. I can look it up in my dictionary.
Great. Yes?
When the urge comes to swallow, when you're doing breath meditation, do you notice, like, wanting to swallow and then you just do it? Or do you say, noticing it and then I'm just going to stay with the breath and let it pass? Or do you give into it?
Do whatever you normally would do. If normally you would have swallowed, just swallow with awareness. Meditation is not, you know, it's not exactly trying to, not really interrupting anything you normally would do in a sense, you know, naturally, like, you know, breathing or swallowing. Or so if you need to swallow and you feel the urge, just be aware that's what's going on.
Okay. So I'm unclear about what's kosher to kind of breathe into and what's not to be attended to. My memory is what breath was the start, and then if a strong physical feeling comes in, then be with that. If a strong emotion comes in, be with that. But if you're thinking kind of creative attack or something, then not to be with that too long.
Well, you're not supposed to be thinking until next week. I didn't make that clear. Next week's when you're allowed to think again. Next week I'll give the instructions around thoughts and how to include thinking. So it's probably best if you just waited for that. So for the time being, for next week, just as best of your ability, just let go of your thinking and come back to this more primary physical experience of breath, body, and emotion. Yes.
Maybe this is part of that, but sometimes I get confused for trying to find the balance between being aware of my emotions and then sort of the chatter of my brain, because they're sort of connected sometimes.
Oh, very.
The chatter that creates the emotion sometimes, or the emotion brings up the chatter. And so I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be ignoring the chatter in mind or noticing that as part of the meditation as well. I really bounce back and forth when I'm dealing with emotions.
It's a very observant concern. It's a very important observation that there's a relationship between our thoughts and our emotions, and our emotions and our thoughts. And they can stimulate each other. You can be having a very peaceful meditation, and then a thought of your mother, you know, so you can. Your mother's name pops up and off you go, and you have whatever emotion associated with your mother kind of go galloping along. What this category that we call emotions is actually a composite. What we call emotions is made up of a number of different factors that come together. One is that it's usually has to do with some kind of ideas or thoughts. Not always, but usually. It has to do with some kind of physical sensation. Some physical sensations in the body. Something happens in the body, the muscles get tight or warm or there's pressure or something going on in the body. And then there's sometimes an intention or motivation connected to the emotion. Like fear, there's an intention to repel something and get away. Anger, there's an intention to kind of get at something or whatever. What we're trying to do in the mindfulness practice is to keep the awareness free and fluid. And one of the primary places where we get caught is in the storyline related to whatever's happening. The storyline. Who did what to who, and what I need to do about it, and what it means, and all these things. And if you pay attention to this process of how we get preoccupied and caught by our thoughts, you'll notice what it feels like to be preoccupied. You'll notice how the awareness gets fixated and stuck. And you're not really present anymore for the change and how things are changing and flowing. So in opening up and bringing attention to emotions, one of the best ways of bringing intimacy to the emotions without getting caught in the story, because the story is not what's happening in the present moment. The story is usually about the past or the future or some other place. What's happening in the present moment is not the story. Story making is happening in the present moment, but the story is not about the present. So what we want to do is to let the awareness become strong enough of what's actually happening in the present moment. So one thing is to recognize story making is happening, which is not being involved with the story. You see the distinction between paying attention to the story and paying attention to story making? And the other thing that's happening in the present moment in relationship to the emotion is that there's physical sensation. And the physical sensations are always in the present. And one of the very useful ways of opening up and being really present for an emotion without getting sucked into the past or the future or into the story is to open the attention up and just feel it as physical sensation wherever it is in the body. And most emotions, people say, you know, be in touch with your emotions because that's what we can tangibly feel it in their body often. Most moods, most emotions have a physical corollary to them. So if you have a choice in the matter, bring your attention to the physical aspect of it. And then what you call the chatter, which I'm calling perhaps a story, has no particular importance for the process of meditation, because a story itself isn't about the present moment, usually. Or isn't a useful way. I mean, the chatter might be about the meaning of this in the present. But even that is keeping ourselves removed. We're kind of in the virtual world of ideas. What we're trying to do in meditation is drop down into how we feel things more fully. So that not so much because feeling is so important, but what we're trying to do is discover this ability of awareness, discover an awareness which is not caught by anything. Am I making myself clear enough to you? Do you want me?
And that's just learning that shift from going from here to a place where you can come to a place of awareness and sort of witnessing what's going on. That's a matter of practice and a matter of following the breath and persistence. I find my head is very insistent on being the dominant force in the universe. and so getting down into my body and sort of witnessing as opposed to, you know, having it be the show is difficult.
Yeah, it is. It takes a while. It's a practice. And one of the ways to help a person not be so caught up in the show, the virtual world of the thoughts and ideas, is certainly you don't want to be at war with it. It's not a problem. We're supposed to think. But one of the ways to kind of break the enchantment that the mind has is to actually find something satisfying with our physical experience. There's something that's a little bit satisfying about being present in the physical lived experience. To feel our lived experience, is it satisfying? Is it nice? The energetics of the body. That can be very helpful for that. But next week, we'll talk more about thoughts, and you should be sure to come next week. Yes?
Were you talking about feeling the emotion and expressing the physical sensation? That's really useful. On the other hand, we're usually supposed to be sitting very still, not moving around. And I had the experience a couple days ago of a
I know it was an emotion that was being expressed, but my feet would not sit still. So I started trying to meditate, and there was just a gentle movement, putting everything in my mind. And they would just keep kicking and twitching. And I'm wondering, you know, are we supposed to say, okay, that's the expression of the emotion, so I'll watch them twitch? Or, you know, am I supposed to say that we're calming the body and staying in the mind? I was very unsure as to how to approach this.
Yeah, if you have strong restlessness in your legs as you meditate, and that's what's predominant, then that becomes your meditation. And twitching is kind of an involuntary reflex. So if it's involuntary, just be aware of movement. But be careful you don't add to it, that you're not actively intending to move. Like, you don't, just try the best you can to sit still. But if it's twitching, you know, let the twitches happen.
And just feel the emotion.
Yeah, and it can be very effective, very useful to bring tremendous awareness to sitting. I mean, a still body is a tremendously powerful way to experience the possibility of letting the body open up entirely and completely to what our inner experience is. If we start moving, some movement is going to do the same thing, but we are so good as human beings to distract ourselves by movement. And as opposed to letting the movement, as opposed to yielding to the deeper inner forces. And if we yield fully to it, it can be very painful to yield to restlessness. But if you can sit really still and just yield to the restlessness and become restlessness, just feel it, as let the whole body be a container of it, you might discover something really marvelous. Yes?
I'm a little uncertain. Let's say I have an epistemic from what I used to
do. Yes.
Am I supposed to, if I'm feeling that when I'm relaxed, am I supposed to concentrate just on my breathing, or do I concentrate on the fact that my stomach hurts?
Yes, that's fine. That's fine to do. What we're cultivating is awareness. So it doesn't really matter what we're strengthening awareness on. It could be anything, basically. What we do in mindfulness is we bring our attention to whatever is most compelling, what's the most obvious thing that's happening in our experience at any given time. And if what's most compelling, most obvious is pain in the stomach, that's where we develop our awareness.
So I don't go back to my breathing?
You don't need to.
So I can just stay with that?
Sure, hang out there for the whole meditation. If that's what's most predominant. At some point, if it's no longer compelling, at some point, if it's no longer... grabbing your attention and it's kind of a little bit in the background, then you can go back to the breath then.
And if you start thinking, oh, what if I eat that? That's like class, and then you just listen.
Yeah, you come back to the actual feeling itself.
So it's not always the breath that
right.
I'm listening to. It's right. Really keeping, it's just...
Well, let me tell you this analogy, which I like giving, is the practice is like a spider web. And the ideal spider sits in the middle of the spider web and waits for something to happen somewhere else in the web. An insect gets trapped. And then the spider scampers up along the web and attends to this thing that's happened there. And then when it's finished attending to it or having eaten it or whatever, then it comes back to the center of the web until the next thing comes and goes out from the center. So we sit in the middle of our mandala, our pie of human experience, and we place the breath at the center. And we just hang out there like the good spider hanging out. And then when something else occurs in our mandala, physical sensations, sounds, thoughts, feelings, emotions, whatever, that something becomes more prominent, becomes more in the foreground. And then we leave the center of the breath, and we go take up this new thing as the object of meditation. The difference between a spider web and us is that we take our center with us. The spider's web center always stays, at the center. The spider's left the center. But the center is wherever we are. So if you're staying with your painful stomach, that's become your center as long as that's the center of your main experience. But that's the feeling of it. It's very fluid and open. That's what... It's not a concentration exercise where we fixate ourselves on the breath at the expense of everything else. It's really, this is why this meditation is so useful in daily life, because in daily life there's a lot of different things changing, happening all the time, And we want to develop the fluidity and the ability to really to move with the changes of daily life and then to bring really clear mindfulness to what's really happening in our present moment, the main important things that are happening. And so this flexibility of movement is a very important aspect. But it doesn't really matter too much what it is we're paying attention to. What we're developing is the awareness itself. So during this last sitting, I asked you at the end to pay some attention to the emotions or mood that you were in, to find it in your body. And what was that like for some of you to do that? Were you able to find an emotion or notice one? And yes?
As sometimes happens with me, I start feeling anxiety. And I noticed, I think it was last week, that I started getting afraid of that, and it just starts feeding on myself, and feeding into myself. So what I tried this time was then, it's okay to be scared, to kind of counteract that, and that actually worked.
Right. Great. So this is having an uncomplicated relationship to your fear, just letting yourself be with anxiety and feel it. It can be a lot more, lot easier. Yes?
I was having difficulty, I did have some emotion, but I found myself creating fantasies out of the emotions.
So making chatter, making stories. So it's very important to notice that. It's very valuable to notice that tendency of the mind and not to condemn it or judge it, but just to notice you have that tendency. And the more clearly you can see that tendency, the more likely you will be not to be sucked into that tendency without your choice. And the more clearly you can see that tendency, the more clearly then you can choose, perhaps, just stay with the emotion itself and not with the fantasy. And it's been very, very useful because most of us will go into the world of, you called it fantasy, someone else, you know, chatter or story making, very quickly in our emotional life and daily life. And to really see that tendency and to see that the stories we often make and tell ourselves aren't necessarily what's going on, really going on in the present moment, it can be very, very freeing and very helpful in making wise decisions about how to live our lives. So part of the meditation practice then is opening to emotions, becoming aware of emotions. And when an emotion or a mood becomes compelling, when it becomes the predominant experience, then the instruction is let go of the breath and let your awareness settle on this emotion or the mood. Seeing if it's possible to be uncomplicated with it, to see if it's possible to be accepting of it, or just allowing it to be there, not criticizing and not judging it. If you criticize and judge it, that's, you know, okay too. Everything you do is okay when you sit in the meditation posture. Isn't it great to do something where you're so forgiving and so allowing? Everything's okay, but what we're trying to do is to bring as clear an awareness to what it is that we're allowing to be okay. We're trying to be as aware as we can of what's going on. And what you'll notice is a tendency to lose that awareness as you start making stories or ideas or getting lost. So what we're trying to do is stay in the awareness of what's happening. So if you notice yourself being critical and judgmental, then just notice that as aware as you can. But notice what your emotions are. See if you can be accepting of it and just allow it to be there. Begin feeling it or investigating it more carefully. What is this emotional experience? How is it felt? Where is it felt in the body? As I said, most emotions have a physical place in the body where they're expressed. Fear in the stomach or anger in the face or different places. So you find where is the main physical center of the particular emotion, and then bring your careful attention to that so you can be present for it without being present for the story. The story is what tends to freeze the emotion. It reinforces it, it strengthens it, and all these things. If we open to the physical experience of it, awareness of a physical tightness or any kind of sensation is kind of like creating space around that sensation. So whatever natural movement, remember emotion means movement, whatever natural movement it wants to make, there's space for it to make it. So if you feel fear and you feel a tightening of your stomach, simply bring careful awareness and hold that area of your stomach in awareness. Feel it, be with it. Kind of like begins creating space. And whatever that stomach needs to do with time, it'll release itself or do whatever it wants to do next. So to begin feeling it in your body is very important. Feeling intimately. We're not trying to create change. We're not trying to make anything better or worse or whatever. What we're trying to do is actually just to see, can we bring this non-judgmental awareness? It's kind of like a mirror that just sees things as they are without getting caught by it, without being fixated on it. Allowing the mirror of awareness to let all the change happen on its own as it flows through. One of the very useful things to do around emotions and being present for them is to name them. We call it noting or labeling experience. I talked a little bit about doing that with the breath, naming it rising, falling, or in or out. You can name your physical experience. But emotions are particularly useful because it's kind of like the old fairy tales, where if you name the dragon loses its power. If you name emotions, some of the power of the emotions gets dissipated or gets lessened. But the power that gets dissipated is not the inherent power of the emotion, but rather it's the power that we fuel the emotion with by identifying with it, by being preoccupied with it. We identify or get preoccupied in all kinds of ways. We're afraid of it. Sometimes a lot of fear of an emotion will actually fuel the emotion. And a lot of self-righteousness around anger will fuel the anger. But if you name very, very quietly from this quiet place of meditation, just simply name the emotion, or there's anger, there's happiness. That part of you is naming it, is not identified with it. And to the degree which you're not identified with it, the fuel that comes from identification is not operating. So naming it can be very useful. You don't get so enmeshed in the emotion if you step kind of back a little bit and see it and just, oh, name it, what's there. So with emotions, when they're strong, to open to them, to allow whatever emotions are there to be there. There's no idea that there's good or bad emotions. There's no need to think good or bad, acceptable or unacceptable. And in meditation practice, you make a lot of freedom. That kind of freedom is the middle way between repression and catharsis, repression and expression. We neither are expressing it, you know, like yelling and screaming, nor are we repressing it, but rather we're giving this tremendous inner freedom for the emotions, whatever they are, the happiness or the sorrow, whatever, to be there in its full glory. Just feeling it, as long as it's predominant. So we accept it, we allow it to be there, we feel it in our body, we kind of drop down into the body and really feel it as a physical phenomena, noticing what happens in the body as we open to it. And you can name it as a way of maybe helping not be so caught by it. So that's kind of the basic instructions around emotions. And I thought we could now try again. So again, softly closing your eyes. And then taking a few moments to arrive. When we meditate, the intention is to be here and now in this body and in this place at this time. So when you begin meditating, take a few moments to remind yourself that this is the place where you're going to sit and be aware in this body at this time. Taking a few deep breaths. as you breathe out, relaxing your brain, relaxing your thoughts, your preoccupations. As you breathe out, letting there be maybe a little inner stillness in your brain, in your thinking organ. And then become aware of your breathing. Letting that awareness, this fluid awareness, relaxed awareness, rest on the rhythmic changes of sensation with the breath. Let yourself rest with the breath. And then if something else becomes more predominant than the breathing, be relaxed about shifting. Just gently let your awareness float to strong physical sensations that might arise. Float to them and just then bring your full attention, your meditative awareness, to sense, to feel the physical sensation. The more closely and the more relaxedly you can feel the sensation, the more likely you are to feel, to notice how the sensation changes. Maybe subtly there's little changes. Very, very softly you can name the physical experience in a regular rhythmic way as a way of helping you stay present for it so the mind doesn't wander away. If some emotion becomes compelling, becomes predominant, comes into the foreground, then let your awareness float to the emotion and become aware of the emotion. Name it, accept it, allow it to be there. Notice whatever complicated ways you react to it and relate to it. Remember, it's a simple noticing practice. And then if you can, just feel what it's like in the body to have this emotion. And then if nothing is particularly compelling, Let the breath be the center of your attention. Let your awareness rest itself with the rhythmic cycles of breathing in and breathing out. Keeping the mind relaxed, coming back from your thoughts whenever you can. As you explore this possibility of awareness, as you explore the awareness of breath, of body, of emotions, let the attitude or the spirit of the practice be perhaps a little bit playful, without being too concerned about doing it right or doing it wrong or what's the exact way of doing it. Let it be kind of exploratory, like a playful exploration. As if no one can really tell you how to do it. There's no right way. It's more like you're pointed in a direction. And now you've gonna explore this new land, this new territory on your own. Maybe kind of playfully. Sometimes breath, sometimes body, sometimes emotions. Staying relaxed. A useful question to ask as you explore the practice is the question, what is it that wants to be accepted? What is it that needs to be accepted right now so that I can be present more fully? So becoming a little bit more sensitive or aware of our emotions is not only useful in meditation, but also in daily life. And as you go about your daily life for this next week, what you might try doing is periodically, various times, to check in and notice what's the emotions, what are the emotions and feelings, the moods that seems to be predominant, seems to be operating at any given time. One of the things I found very useful is when I'm in the throes of a strong emotion is not to make a decision when I'm in that strong emotional place. If I'm filled with anger or filled with lust or filled with whatever, not to make a decision, but rather to make some space rather than rush into saying something or rush into doing something. And you might find that useful. You might experiment a little bit this week with becoming aware of your emotions. And then rather than acting out of an emotion, and maybe rather than just being passive, actively bring awareness to the situation. Notice what happens if you bring awareness to what's happening rather than a response. Maybe it means you're waiting 10 seconds and during 10 seconds just monitoring how what's going on, what you're feeling, rather than rushing into the usual responses you make and have. And then to kind of end this evening, I would like to read this short poem by Rumi that belongs now to the liturgy of the Vipassana world. It gets repeated a lot. It's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and respect them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He or she may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide. So this is kind of the spirit of change, of transiency. A lot of things will come visiting you and a lot of things will pass through. And so respect them all. Respect means to look again. Literally means to respect, like spectator, right? Respect, to look again. To respect everything. Give it a second look. Allow it to be there. And treat it like a guest that comes and goes. No need to judge or criticize anything. Just let it all move through you. This human being is a guest house. So thank you all for this evening. I hope this was useful. And next week we'll talk a little bit about thoughts, which I think it's a useful topic in that a lot of people are struggling with their thoughts in relationship to meditation. So I think it's an important topic. So I hope you all have a nice week.